Fed Talks is a weekly podcast featuring federal program staff from the Georgia Department of Education and Georgia's public schools. For many individuals, the purpose of federally funded programs is unknown. Through its Fed Talk series, the Georgia Department of Education is sharing more information on the ways Georgians are leveraging federal funds to serve Georgia's students and Georgia's schools. Welcome to Fed Talks.
Well, welcome everybody. Welcome back to our podcast series. We've been at this for what, 6 months now?
That sounds about right.
All right, and it seems to be going well, and we are trying to hit all of the title programs under the Elementary and Secondary Education Act of 1965, which I'm sure our listeners are now very familiar with. And the topic today is going to actually be Title II Part A, and we'll get into what that title is all about, the official name of it, when we begin our conversation with our guests. But in the meantime, I want to make sure everybody knows I'm Craig Gears, work in federal programs at the Georgia Department of Education, and right alongside me are my colleagues.
Hi, everyone. I'm John White with Federal Programs.
Sean Owen with Federal Programs.
And our guest of honor today is Carly Ambler.
Hi, I'm Carly Ambler. I work with the Title II Part A Supporting Effective Instruction Grant.
Great. All right. Well, let's get started with some questions and find out what this baby is all about.
So I'll go ahead and start out, Carly. What's the role of Title II Part A and ESSA, and how can the money be used?
Title II Part A is actually a pretty fascinating grant. Unlike some of the other title grants that are really narrowly focused on particular student groups, this grant is available to all schools, both public schools and private schools, and it works on ensuring that teachers have opportunities for professional growth, just like any other person in society would want to continue their education in their particular field. It also gives leaders that same opportunity, so as we have new leaders move into new positions, they have the opportunity to have that professional growth as well.
That's a great question, and Sean, and you kind of answered my question, Carly. Can you talk a little more about who's eligible? Some of the other programs who we've talked with, they've been kids who are actually eligible for services, but this might be a little different. Can you help us understand that?
Absolutely. So in this particular case, the grant is very prescriptive, as outlined in the law, and it's specifically for teachers. It is under ESSA for pre-K through 12th grade teachers in any content area, whether they're providing actual content like ELA or science or social studies or math, or even CTAE, which would be like your career prep areas. So business and agriculture. So we actually can pay for people in all these different fields to go ahead and get continuing education. And you can imagine in a state like Georgia, where we're really focused on making sure students are ready for careers, that this is making sure that our educators are up to date on the current information. That's a particularly important role.
So the teachers apply for the grant themselves if they feel like they have a need?
Well, I wish it were that easy. A lot of what you find in ESSA is very prescriptive. Mm-hmm. It's written out in law, but it looks like, and as a bipartisan approach, it really wants to protect all the students and make sure that they all have access. So the way they do that is they do a needs assessment with private schools and with public schools in order to determine which teachers need continuing education and which leaders. Well, like a lot of the other title programs, we have opportunities for lots of stakeholders to get involved. It is written into the law that we need to make sure parents and community members and even other agencies external to the district are included in a needs assessment, because we know that quality schools build up our communities. So we want to make sure that it's really a community effort to make sure that they have the continuing education opportunities. So whoever does get the opportunity for continuing ed, those are the people that are kind of designated by the different schools, the districts, who know what their students need.
But the overall process is at the LEA level. So it is very much like the other.
Right. That's what we wanted to clarify, because some of the other programs, they would do the needs assessment in the schoolhouse. But this one might be, it sounds like it's at the district level doing the needs assessment for all the schools together. Is that correct?
It could happen either way.
Okay.
It's actually pretty flexible. You could start at the school and say, what are your needs? And then kind of build it up and compile it at the district level. Or you could start at the district level and do some data analysis and work your way back down. It really is pretty flexible as to how it's done.
You mentioned private schools. So our audience who have been faithful listeners to the podcast series remember our Equitable Services mm-hmm. podcast. So this is one of those grants that is equally available to private school teachers in this case.
Right, private school teachers and their leaders. And because it's so accessible, because most professionals do need continuing education, it's also one of the grants that's most commonly used by private schools.
So if private schools and the public schools, those teachers or leaders identify through the needs assessment process similar needs, do districts ever have the private school teachers and the public school teachers working together on professional learning? Is that possible? Because that's kind
they
of a,
do.
We don't ever think that something like that could exist.
Well, I hope that.
I know, but in our minds, I think.
In a positive approach, we have a number of private schools that are very close partners with our public schools. They sit down together. They have conversations about what's available and what they'll take part of. And, of course, if they have some differing needs, they explore those independently. But for small private schools who may have a moderate amount of money, it is actually a great investment for them to work with the public mm-hmm. schools. And above and beyond that, they're all our kids. They could sure. easily go between a public school and a private school, so it's in our best interest that all our educators on both sides have these opportunities.
So we've talked some about the role. We've talked some about eligibility. Now let's talk a little bit about allocations. How are the allocations determined, Carly?
And again, this was our representatives trying to make sure that everything was really equitable. There's a big focus on the grant for being equitable and also for making sure that historically underserved populations, so schools that have high minority and high poverty populations, also have a fair chance at making sure that those teachers are well educated and trained and prepared as we go into the future. So it's a formula grant and it's a per pupil basis and it's based on census data at the national level. School districts report that information. It's used to determine how that happens in Georgia. And then when we get down to the actual district and private school level, we look at the enrollment on a certain date and time. So our school districts have a data collections date where they submit some reports to the state, and the private schools can tell us who they have enrolled at that time. And that way we remove some overlap, and we just decide down to the child level what that allocation is, and then it goes out that way. So it really makes sure that every teacher and every school has an opportunity based on the students that they serve. There is a weight towards poverty, which speaks to that equity that I mentioned.
I like the fact that they choose a very particular point in time mm-hmm. for the enrollment numbers for both the public and private, because that really is being fair.
Mm-hmm. Right, so I have an extension on that question. You know, we all watch the news, we hear about how Congress interacts with budgets for all the federal agencies. How does that impact the Title II program? Has there been any kind of anything in the news or anything that our listeners might help them understand about the grant and how Congress allocates funds?
So we've definitely been in the news a lot over the past 2 years. But I think that it was a good conversation for our country to have at the time. Part of the president's budget proposed to eliminate Title II. And the reason behind it was they said, well, when we look at congressional reports, it's really hard to determine the effectiveness of this money that we're investing as taxpayers. So like any good consumer, you would want to know that what you spend has some impact and has some results. Now, I will say in Georgia, I think we're ahead of the game. Before that ever came out, we started to focus, our board led us through starting to focus on effectiveness and making very clear connections between the initiatives we have going on at the state and actual student achievement and teacher performance. It is a little harder with PL to determine how that professional learning for a teacher directly impacts an individual student at a point in time, because we know that students have more than just academics. They have parents and communities and other considerations. But if you're doing really high quality PL, we should be able to know the impact. So this is actually one of the funding sources that has really rallied a lot of communities, because kids are actively enrolled in schools right now and they want to know that as they prepare the kids for the future, these teachers have access to what's going on in the workplace so that they can support the kids. So it's really kind of a scary world if you think about having kids out there and teachers not having professional learning to help them get prepared. So the Senate and the Congress all worked together to make sure that all happened and to directly address effectiveness too. So I think that it really hit that bipartisan piece and pulled everybody together to support what'll be a good investment, but also continuing education.
And actually, I think another layer of that, if I'm not mistaken, was there was also some concern that the other title programs, many of those that we've talked about thus far, also can use some of those funds for professional learning. So Congress are really doubling up on funding when right. These other mm-hmm. grants also can do that. So why do we need a separate grant? But I think the reality is those grants can't necessarily cover all of the needs.
Well, and they can't cover all the schools.
Right.
Title can cover title schools. Right. And in Georgia, we have a spectrum. We have schools that are very high poverty and high need that qualify for Title I. But we have schools that are really well performing, and they need that opportunity to have continuing
Good
education
point.
Too. One of the criticisms of No Child Left Behind was that it left behind the gifted kids. But we know that all our children need growth, need the opportunity to continue to learn and improve. So this gives that opportunity at both title and non-title schools.
That's a good point.
Great.
So you've given us a lot of information to think about. If some of our listeners wanted to find additional information regarding what you've been discussing, where can they go?
Well, I always would start at the federal programs webpage. We have links from the federal programs webpage to both Title II Part A as it impacts LEAs, and we have links to the ombudsman webpage where they can see how Title II impacts private schools.
All right. I think we're about out of time for
right.
this first section in our series on Title II. So we will wrap it up and say thank you to Carly, and we hope you'll come back and continue the conversation with us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Thanks,
Carly.
You.